Previously on Colors.
Her name is Nissa Ree.
I'm a white person, female, and I live in Chicago. I'm the executive director and co-founder of a nonprofit news outlet that covers immigration.
We caught up with her in Greece, where she was training journalists.
I think a lot about race when it comes to the topic of immigration and that system.
And she has a vested interest in what's happening in America's racial scene.
My husband is Korean American. We have biracial children. So I really see race impact my family directly through my children and my husband and through my work, and seeing how race is such a central motivator in our immigration system and how we detain and decide who gets to come into our country or not.
Coming up in this episode of Colors.
Bienvenidos sean todos a las tardeadas con DJ Chicano en la mera mera 1050 AM 93.5 FM.
His name is Bryant Morales.
I'm also known as DJ Chicano here in the area.
And you can hear him on La Mera Mera Radio in Washington, D.C.
I'm currently 27 years old. I'm a local Marylander, but I am Latino, my dad being Mexican and my mom being Peruvian.
And we're going to talk with him about his work.
I love being able to connect with people through music.
That's coming up in this episode of Colors.
Simmering racial tensions.
Segregation now and tomorrow and forever.
Fighting injustice.
I have a dream.
Conflict looming.
Justice! Peace!
Brutality exposed.
I can't breathe! I can't breathe!
The search for solutions starts here.
From WTOP in Washington, D.C., this is Colors, a dialogue on race in America.
Vietnamese American. I was born and raised in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Michael L. Crenn. I am white and I currently live in Boone, North Carolina.
My name is Amy Hendricks. I am a member of the Cherokee Nation and I live on the Cherokee Reservation.
And I'm JJ Green and I'm black. And this is Colors. Okay, here in the studio with us is Bryant Morales, known as DJ Chicano at La Mera Mera here in Washington, D.C. He's the afternoon drive personality. DJ Chicano, Brian, welcome to the Colors podcast.
Thanks for having me, JJ. It's an absolute honor to be with you.
Pleasure to talk to you, too. First thing I want to do is to just get into a little bit of your background. You can explain to the audience what your roots are, how that all came about.
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Bryant Morales, as you mentioned. I'm 27 years old. I was born here in Maryland. My dad is from Mexico. My mom is from Peru. So that's where at least Chicano comes from, you know, being Mexican-American. I wish there was a name for Mexican and Peruvian, but...
maybe you can make up one.
Maybe, yeah. I'll see what I can maybe come up with. But I've been... I named myself DJ Chicano over 12 years ago. So yeah, it's kind of hard for me to go ahead and change names at this point.
I understand with a name like JJ that I got more than 30 years ago.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to change it now because a lot of people ask me, what is your name? And I'm like, that's my professional name. Mm-hmm. But anyway, welcome to Colors. It's such a pleasure to have you here. Can you talk a little bit about your Mexican and Peruvian heritage? How does that guide you, or how does that set you up for to engage in today's world?
Well, being Mexican, more than anything, we have such a huge Mexican community here in the DMV area. That's really helped a lot when it comes to DJing wise. Also, you know, having the knowledge to being an on-air talent for La Mera Mera, which is a Mexican, regional Mexican radio station. So that helps out a lot there. Being Peruvian, absolutely love the dishes.
The El pollo wise. Campero y yeah, la
like
cosa.
Pollo la brasa, you know, yeah. chicken loco and stuff like that, sardines. And,
I mean, that stuff is really good. But anyway, back to you, man.
Yeah, so also being, you know, Peruvian, it's great because when I tell people that, hey, you know, I'm Peruvian as well, they're like, what? Like, we wouldn't have imagined that mixture of Mexican and Peruvian. But other than the dishes, the music, I love the music.
Yeah.
My mom's part of the family, they're very much dancers. They love dancing. So I was always exposed to the music of the Peruvian culture. There's very different genres in the Peruvian music culture. Mm-hmm. So I was able to get to know a little bit about that.
If I may jump in, what kind of dances does your mom like to do? Are these the traditional dances, or are these more modern?
It's dances? More modern, yeah. So there's a genre called cumbia. So, you know, it's danceable to anybody. Anybody can groove to that, pretty much. But there are also ones that, you know, of course, our ancestors have danced that's still alive.
Right.
They also dance that. They might not know the choreograph to it, but, you know, they move around and they kind of want to, like, imitate dancing from back in the day. It's more than anything, it's modern cumbia. Salsa is very big in Peru as well. Even though they don't know as much salsa, but, you know, me being able to at least learn and listen to the salsa from Peru, I can also incorporate that in my sets when I'm ever, you know, DJing out here in what's called the social dancing scene. So dancing scene here in the area, it's where people, you know, go out to pretty much just enjoy themselves and like to dance. It's social. You know, they dance to salsa and bachata, you know, things like that.
Merengue.
Yeah, that too. Merengue as well.
So I'm fluent in Spanish, and I've been fluent in Spanish for close to 20 years, and I've learned a lot of things, and there are some things that I really enjoy that I wanted to kind of chat about with you today. The first thing is the papantla.
Okay.
The pole where the dance takes place and the ribbons or whatever it is that's wrapped around it. Mm-hmm. So there's a dance that goes on, and it starts with them at the top.
Yes. There's a pole, and then
the papantla.
And
they kind of unwind. You do know that.
Yeah. I've seen it in person. Yes.
So what's the objective there?
I think it's just a bunch of balancing more than anything. You know, and being able to successfully come down, but also do like aerobics in a way, you know, because they're also doing tricks while they're doing
this. They're absolutely doing tricks.
So I think that has a lot to do with that. But as of maybe, well, who knows what it was? I mean, at least I don't know what it was, like, the goal wise to this. But it's a nice sight to see, at least.
Yeah. No, so part of the reason why I became a Spanish speaker was I had a video production company, and I had a client in Mexico in the Caribbean region. It's an echo park called Xcaret.
Okay.
And they had all of the slices of Mexican culture shown there. And one of the things was this game that the ancient warriors used to play with a ball, you know, and it's very much like soccer today, except they played it with their hands. You know, there was a little hole that they had to throw that ball through.
They were on the walls.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, and it's really interesting. They were so fit. They had to be to play that game and to do this thing with the papantla you talked about. And, you know, it's just remarkable to me. They're great swimmers, fishermen and women.
hunters as well.
Yeah, so talk to me a little bit about the hunting and all that.
Yeah, so, you know, of course, back in the day, hunting-wise, you know, that's the way that they would have to do to get food, you know. So a bunch of techniques, you know. So, of course, there was the spitting dart, we could say, where there's a... It's a long tube, and they put whatever the needle is, and then, you know, they blow into it.
Blow it.
You know, and it strikes wherever the animal hits, and it's almost kind of like a, you know, like not like a tranquilizer, but, you know, the needle pretty much, I guess, relaxes the you know, well, yeah, it's a tranquilizer pretty much almost.
Yeah.
You know, and it faints or whatever it does, and then, you know.
It's dinner time.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so, of course, you know, there's that. You know, the bow and arrows, of course, you know, bow and arrows, I think they used to do the sharps. I mean, the arrows, the arrows that, of course, they would craft it. You know, and that's something that's pretty interesting of how they knew how to craft things weapons wise, things to use to be able to hunt, you know, everyday kind of things, you know, and it's amazing. And I also would like to know a little bit more about that history, because I do remember, you know, us knowing about this in high school, you know, learning about this in high school. And it was very interesting to me. Like when what you mentioned with the it almost looked like soccer.
Right.
But, you know, the goals, we could say, was like little holes on the walls.
Right.
You know, and it's interesting because I do remember that whoever won that, like, I guess it was like some sort of tournament.
Yeah.
They would be sacrificed.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
So that to me was like mind blowing when I first found out.
Well, I guess you go from this big high to what we would consider not so much, but maybe, you know, I guess their way of thinking about it was that would be the ultimate, to win this.
Yeah,
and be sacrificed.
It was an honor to, you know, to be sacrificed, you know. And it's crazy because, you know, nowadays soccer, you get a trophy, you probably get more money off of things. But back in the day, you know, you were sacrificed. But maybe it was because, you know, you were going to join the army of the gods,
the ancestors.
Up in heaven, you know. So
totally.
So I could that was definitely surprising to me when I first found that out.
So what do you know most about your Peruvian ancestry and history? What things stand out to you?
Well, when I was about 12 to 13 years old, I did go out to Cusco. And that was a big adventure there because, you know, of course, it's a 3 to 4 day tour. And eventually the last day they send you up to Machu Picchu. They can't send you to Machu Picchu right away. You know, because it's the altitude there is so huge, is that if they take you up to Machu Picchu on the first day, you'll die. You know, your whole body has to be
acclimated.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. So being able to learn a little bit about Cusco was interesting. That's something that I guess I could personally, you know, in firsthand hand, I can say about it. Cusco, it's amazing to see how the streets are all, you know, built. It's not asphalt. Well, most of like the main roads are asphalt, at least the ones that head to the airport kind of thing. But, you know, then there's neighborhoods where, you know, it's literally stones.
Yeah.
You know, it's stones. I remember the first day they took us over to one of the main churches in the center of Cusco.
And I bet you that church was hundreds of years old.
Oh, for sure. And and what was interesting was that the whole entire floor was made of gold. The whole entire floor was made of gold. There were statues that were made of gold. It was amazing.
And this is ancient.
Yeah. You know, of course, they have it kind of blocked off in a way, so that way people can't touch it and, you know, they could preserve it as much as they can. something that's, I don't know if I could say this, but, you know.
You can.
It really sucked that I wasn't used to the elevation, to the altitude. So the first day, you know, they brought us around the neighborhood and they took it to this church, but I wasn't used to it. So I wasn't feeling at all good. So unfortunately, I had to throw up all over the golden floor.
My God.
And I was very apologetic.
At least you admitting it, bro.
Yeah. And I was very apologetic. And, you know, everybody was like, no, it's fine. People do it every day. So we're already used to it.
They
probably do. Yeah. Yeah.
He was just showing that you were human, man.
Yeah, for sure, you know. So all that happened. And, of course, you know, then every other day, you know, so the next day, the second day, the third day, they take you up and up and up and up. You know, it's little by little that they take you up until the last day of the tour. Then they take you up to Machu Picchu. You know, so you get to see the little civilizations that the Incas have been able to form a little by little by little by little. And then I could also say is that little by little, you could start to see, you could start to picture Machu Picchu of how they started building things, how they started or you know, how they started going, moving up as well.
Right.
So that was very, very interesting. We got to Machu Picchu and it was amazing.
Yeah,
it was amazing. And sometimes, you know, I ask myself, like, how can these men and probably not women, or who knows, maybe women too. But how can these men like bring these boulders on top of their on top of their shoulders? Yeah. And, you know, and being able to construct walls and houses. And
they had some bad ingenuity back then.
Yeah, I mean,
people
talk
about the Egyptians and their slave labor. And these were people of color that was doing that for the Egyptians. You know, but here you go.
Yeah.
I mean, same deal. You know, there's a saying that says they were here before Columbus, and they're talking about people of color,
right?
You know, and all of the ingenuity and all of the impact that people of color had in South America way before Columbus came here and started deciding, okay. We've arrived. Europeans have arrived. But, I mean, there was some stuff going on here, man, some brilliant ingenuity going on. That sounds to me like a perfect example of it.
The way they cultivated as well over in Machu Picchu, where they had, like, little garden beds, and they engineered it so that when rain would fall, it wouldn't just stay on one floor, I guess, of a garden. They angled it in a way so that way water can, you know,
just
run down. Yeah, so it was like a bunch of stairs. You know, and so they angled it downward so that way, you know, rain and water can also reach other plants and vegetables and stuff like that. It's amazing. It's completely amazing.
No doubt. You've taken all of that culture and all of that knowledge and infused it into your life. And your daily thing is, as we mentioned earlier, you're DJ Chicano. Mm-hmm. You're here in the States. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering how you use all of that culture and knowledge and understanding in your daily life, in your vocation, in your music, in your work.
Well, Mexican side, of course, you know, I do this on a daily here over in La Mera Mera from Monday through Friday in the afternoons. So being able to also communicate with our fellow audience, you know, being able to use a vocabulary that only we know, you know, so that also, you know, that works out. We do have a little segment where we play, where we, as DJs, we mix on air. So it's a whole hour long. So people love to hear the different genres, you know, all in 1 hour.
Yeah.
So that's something that really works out. Of course, you know, when I'm outside of the radio, I also do DJ at nightclubs. I DJ at weddings. I DJ at Sweet 15, quinceañeras, all that stuff. So it's amazing to see how I can connect with people through music. And that's something that I absolutely love. In the Peruvian side, same thing as well. I'm not really exposed much to the Peruvian community, just because I wouldn't say that it's small, but the Mexican community overpowers it, of course. I know more people that are Mexican than that are Peruvian.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do stumble across, you know, a couple of Peruvians, and I ask, you know, where they're from and stuff like that, because it's very rare that you can encounter somebody from Peru. My mom is from the Amazon, Amazon jungle. So she's from a city called Iquitos. So like I said, this city is literally right next to the Amazon River. Now, it's hard for her to find people from, you know, her city, because, you know, it's kind of hard to leave that place and then head into the city and stuff like that and try to get a visa, you know, but being able to at least, you know, ask people like, hey, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Peru. Oh, yeah. What city or, you know, or what state or whatever it is. Then they tell me, oh, yeah, you know, my mom's from Peru. And then they obviously they connect Iquitos to the Amazon River, the Amazon, yeah. you know, the Amazon jungle. And it's absolutely beautiful, you know, but Peruvian side, at least in my day to day life, of course, my family, you know, my mom is here. I just have my aunts that just came from Peru as well. And my cousin that came from Peru. So I get to talk about Peru a little bit. And then I think I'm also a little bit more exposed to the Peruvian culture now that my aunts and uncles and my cousin is here. Because before I only had my mom, so I really only had my mom to be able to talk about this stuff. But my mom has been here for more than 25 years, you know, so it's not like she's, you know, been living out there, you know, on a day-to-day basis, you know. It's more of my aunts and my cousin that has been, you know, over there recently and stuff like that. So,
okay. La comida. Mm-hmm. ¿Cuál es tu favorito?
Oh, between Mexican and Peruvian.
Yeah, I'm throwing you a curve here. Oh, you got to choose, bro.
Okay. I honestly got to say Peruvian.
Really?
I honestly got to say Peruvian. Yes.
Why?
The spices, the taste. It's all. Oh, my water is melting.
Your mouth is watery.
Yeah, my mouth is watery right now.
He's telling the truth, y'all. He really is.
You know, I can tell you this, you know, a really good traditional lomo saltado.
Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, lomo saltado. It's like steak, steak sirloins and strips.
Ah,
you know, so that's in a dish.
A la parrilla.
Yeah, and then
on the grill.
Yeah, on the grill. Of course, it has some French fries on. It's got onions. It has tomatoes.
Now it's my turn to have the mouth watering problem.
Yeah, you know, they put it on some rice, of course. And then of course they also use soy sauce, and it's a fusion because there is a heavy Asian culture that has moved into Peru for the last couple of years. Not last couple of years, but a bunch of years actually.
Yeah, I know, cuz yeah. You know, the president at one point, probably about 25 years ago, was Japanese.
Yeah.
Alberto Fujimoto.
Yeah. Yeah, Fujimori.
Yeah.
So there is a big, there's a big.
So now I got to dig a little bit deeper. I don't know why I'm doing this now, because we got to drop this or finish this in a couple of minutes. But I've heard numerous times that there is a very close similarity between many South Americans and Asians.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because they say of ancient migration patterns.
Right.
Because, you know, I've been to, for instance, the tri-border area, Paraguay, Argentina, and Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a tribe there called the Achi.
Okay.
And the Achi are exactly like this tribe from Asia.
Okay.
Which the name escapes me right now, but there was a tsunami some years ago. And the tribe, the people that were impacted were called the Banda Achi.
Okay.
And it was like, it connected for me that they were the same people.
Yeah.
When I went to the eastern part of Paraguay.
Okay.
So I assume that there is some of that influence as well in Peru.
Oh, very, very, very. I mean, large corporations, large companies, restaurant owners, you know, a bunch of these big franchises out in Peru, they're all Asian owned.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, yeah, there is a very big Asian influence there. Is it because maybe the economy is well, the economy in Peru, as we you know, talk, you know, it's not very good.
Right.
You know, it's hard for people to, you know, have a living out there. Or, you know, so why did they go out to Peru? Why did they choose Peru? I'm not quite sure. But there is a very, very huge Asian influence out there. And then, you, of course, you know, you see Asians everywhere. And I think that's why I look Asian, you know.
Well, there's the ancestry.
Yeah. So
listen, we're talking with DJ Chicano, Brian Morales here from La Mera Mera 1050 AM, 93.5 FM in the DMV. And this has been an absolute pleasure, my brother.
No, it's been great. Yeah. Thanks, JJ.
Maybe at some point we get another chance to engage with you in your spot.
Yeah.
Your show or something.
That sounds good. That sounds good to me. You're always welcome to come over.
But thank you for joining us on Colors today.
No, thank you. It's been an honor.
Stay tuned for some thoughts about race in America and details about our next guest.
You're listening to Colors.
My name is Barbara Savage. I live in Philadelphia. I grew up in Virginia. I am an African American. I've been privileged to have, you know, good education. But the best teachers and the most important teachers I had were in those segregated schools in Virginia, not because they were segregated, but because of the extraordinary commitment of Black teachers who taught me how to read and write and who, you know, had me reading Langston Hughes and Shakespeare, taught me chemistry and physics and math, and who basically said, you must go forward and take advantage of these opportunities. I'm a part of that generation, and I see my life and my work as really not an obligation to them, but certainly a way of honoring their struggles, their commitments, but I am in fact a Southerner, and I was formed by all of those experiences, and I'm actually proud to still claim that.
This is Colors, a dialogue on race in America.
If you have any questions or comments about Colors, send us an email. You can reach us at colors@thecolorspodcast.com. That's colors@thecolorspodcast.com.
Coming up in our next episode of Colors.
Roller skating. It's back. But it actually never left.
At a time when, you know, people are looking for things that work, that when I say work, are beneficial to the community, and community being people of all ages.
Tasha Klusman is the board president of the Our Family Skate Association based in Washington, D.C.
You know, we know that roller skating is one of those things that you can start doing as soon as you start walking, 2 or 3 years old, and you can do well into your 80s. It is a lifetime sport.
And don't look now, but roller skating.
And again, it has so many aspects to it that seemingly most people don't know about. So that educational piece is really key for us.
And it's fun, too.
It is the best exercise, fun, entertainment.
Great story for you.
That's coming up in our next episode of Colors.
As time passes, doing these shows just gets better and better for me. I hope it is for you, too. I really am enjoying it. We're starting to get to some of the more very interesting aspects of our lives when it comes to race and the elements that we all deal with, the good, the bad, and the in the middle. Thank you, Jesse Gallagher, for the music. Thanks to Anjo for music. Thanks to Cosmic. Thanks to all of you for listening. We appreciate your time. And as I always say, please continue to talk to each other.
And just as important, keep listening to each other.
You can subscribe to Colors wherever you get your podcasts. This is Colors, a dialogue on race in America.